Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast, into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Texans, Vikings, Sunday noon. We're back to noon kickoff on Sunday. The game is in Minnesota. 9 a.m. Texans countdown, presented by Modelo Especial. Seth and I have you for that at 9 a.m. And then kickoff at noon. Then me and Clint Sterner on the postgame show. Hopefully another victorious one. Texans and Vikings, two of nine undefeated teams at this stage of the season here. So let's start digging in on this. Nick Caserio's scouting reports on the opposition that he does with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer have started to go like kind of quasi-viral. There's a lot of people that are very impressed by how Nick can just rattle off virtually the entire two deep of the opposing team and give little like consumable bite-sized morsels on each player.
It's, yeah, like every single player on every the team single without one. Looking at the depth chart or anything.
Yes.
Which you might think, like, oh, shouldn't everybody? I don't know. I saw Kevin O'Connell, the head coach of the Vikings, reeling off some of the players for the Texans, and I could see, because I do this myself, he realized, like, okay, I'm not going to struggle for this name. I'm just going to say the position group. Because he would name off a few names, and he'd be like, and then, yeah, those running backs behind Mixon, yes, those
it's
guys.
A good tactic. Yes, it's a good tactic. Yeah. Here's Nick Caserio on somebody he's very familiar with. This will be a key figure in this game. It's not even a player. Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator for the Minnesota Vikings, who Nick worked with up in New England for many, many years. Here's Nick Caserio on Brian Flores and how he thinks he'll try to attack the Texans.
Yeah, I'd say Flo is a very adaptable, very flexible, very good football coach. So I know he's the defensive coordinator, but Flo is probably one of the better coaches, just football coaches in the league. So they cause a lot of havoc for the opposing offense by the way that they play. So it's a very unique style of play. Not everybody can do it. I'd say Flo is kind of taken some elements, maybe the foundation, and it kind of evolved and morphed it into like his defense. And they've done a great job of putting that defense together, how they play. There's not too many teams that play with their style. Yep. They put a lot of, I would say, pressure on the offense more mentally as well as physically, because you have to be able to react to what you're seeing, and you have to just trust your rules, and it goes back to your foundation, which goes back to training camp. But I mean, their defense is, I mean, it's really good defense. They're good on the edge. There's a reason that they're 2-0, and you know, it's a pretty significant challenge here that we're going to see here on Sunday.
You know, Stephon Gilmore is one of their cornerbacks who has kind of just been a... It's weird. He's been a journeyman, except almost by choice, I think, that he's gone from team to team to team, but played very well as he enters the later stages of his career.
Mm-hmm.
But he's one of those guys that, like many other players on the Vikings defense, they're able to do a lot of the stuff that defensive coordinators can draw up on the whiteboard and look like geniuses, but you try to do it in real time on a football field and you look like a moron because it's hard for your players to execute all that. So disguising things, messing with alignments, all this stuff that adds a lot of complexity for the quarterback who's facing that defense, but the defense has to be able to pull it off mentally and physically, and they're very well coached in that regard. So Flores does a great job with that. I think if you watch Brock Purdy versus the Vikings last week, I think there were times where Brock Purdy was making the right read and recognizing what was going on, but he was a beat late. And he was kind of checking to confirm instead of just letting it fly. And this is the challenge. I'm not going to sit here and act like, well, yeah, but CJ is so much smarter than Brock Purdy. I think CJ does advance at a different level than Brock Purdy mentally, but sometimes that gets you in trouble. You know, sometimes that's the... sometimes
use it against
that's, you. Yeah, that's what that used to get. Now, CJ's been very good at avoiding interceptions, but Ryan Fitzpatrick's the classic example of that. He was too smart for his own good sometimes because he felt like, oh, yeah, I know what they're doing. Oh, crap. They knew that I knew that I knew what I was
yeah,
doing.
Yeah,
and
that's
they were
the
one
thing.
Step
it's,
further
it,
than
yeah,
me.
Yeah, it's the chess game. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So that's Nick on Brian Flores. Here is Nick Caserio on Sam Darnold, who, you know, it's two games in, but so far so good as the Minnesota Vikings starting quarterback.
For better or for worse, everything focuses and centers on the quarterback, but you have to look at it holistically. So there's always there's so many components that go into it. So what's the system? What's the scheme? Who's the coordinator? How are you being coached? What's being taught? What's the rest of the composition look like offensively? Do you modify and adjust as you go? So there's so many different factors that go into it. Say Sam has taken advantage of his opportunities. Sure, he learned a lot last year playing for Kyle and being in that system. And then he looked at an opportunity in Minnesota. He probably knew I'm going to go into a situation where they're probably going to draft a quarterback. Mm. But I'll have an opportunity to play. And Kevin's a really good offensive coach. So it seems like the marriage has worked out well for all parties involved. So every situation is different. It's always going to be case by case. But just philosophically, it's more than just the quarterback. The quarterback's an important part of it. But there's so many other factors that go into it.
I think we're seeing something, Sean, happen in the league where for a long time, okay, quarterbacks come in. They're going to start immediately these days because why not? You got to get them out there. And now you're starting to see examples of, for one, guys like Pat Mahomes who sat a year. It's impossible to know how it would have been if he had come in and played. Would he have been faster? Who knows? It was probably good for him to sit for a year. But then we're also seeing guys like Tua Tagovailoa or Baker Mayfield, for the moment at least, that, all right, back in the old days, Eli Manning, it took 3 years for Eli Manning to figure it out. And, if Eli Manning had been brought into the league 15 years later, he might have been traded after his rookie year or his second year. And you wonder, okay, Geno Smith is another example
Geno's
of a guy
a good one.
That,
yeah,
these guys that have come back and after being regarded as one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, okay, there's a lot more to it. So Sam Darnold now has experience in this scheme by way of being in San Francisco for a year, a very, very similar scheme to what they're doing in the Vikings. And we don't know right now whether Sam Darnold is a good or a bad quarterback.
Right.
There's just, and this is the challenge of facing somebody like Sam Darnold in this scheme early on in the season. He doesn't have any tendencies yet. And he did some really good things against the 49ers defense, which is a very good defense. So it's weird to call Sam Darnold the first real test the Texans have faced. But in terms of veteran quarterbacks, yeah, this is a veteran quarterback who I think is more advanced mentally and is very physically capable, has a high upside, much more so than the previous two young quarterbacks.
Yeah, I like that Nick cited the year of apprenticeship that Darnold spent in San Francisco last year in this system, the same system that they're running in Minnesota. I just think it's interesting, and I'm not going to get too far off track here. We're going to stick with the Texans and the Vikings. But as I'm thinking about Darnold, and you bring up Mayfield's name, and I think of these guys, and I think of Bryce Young right now. And if I'm Bryce Young and I'm trying to map out what my next step is, now granted, he's under contract to the Panthers, and the Panthers have indicated they have no desire to trade him. We'll see. That may just be talk. But if I'm thinking ahead, if I'm Bryce Young, I'm thinking, okay, there's no future for me here in Carolina. I'm looking at guys like this and seeing what exactly they did to get, especially a guy like Baker who got paid finally, got $100 million, that kind of thing. I just think it's funny that the two guys that we've been talking about in this segment here, Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield, both stopped in Carolina for a year or a year and a half. Baker for part of a year. They were there together in Carolina at one point. They were two of the top three picks in the 2018 draft, and they were both Carolina Panthers at one point. And then they both got the hell out of there. Darnold gets out of there. He goes to San Francisco. Now it looks like his career's back on track. Baker gets out of there. They cut him midway through that year. He goes to L.A., plays for Sean McVay for the rest of that year, and then he goes to Tampa, and now he's being paid like a top-line quarterback. That's who I think of when I see these things. I'm like, man, if I'm Bryce Young, that's who I'm talking to. I'm talking to Darnold and Mayfield and find out what they did to get things back on track.
Yeah, in my efforts to be a better human being this morning after I allowed myself to be the pettiest person on earth yesterday, and it was fun. I'm gonna be a little bit petty here.
Okay.
Let's just go ahead, Texans defense, and squash this Cinderella story underfoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you just go ahead and make Sam Darnold look like the worst quarterback who ever lived?
That'll
Can you
good.
Do that for us?
Yeah.
Texans defense, please make him look like a haggard mess of a disaster and one that has Minnesotans just freaking out and miserable on Monday.
What's your legit concern level over Sam Darnold having a big... Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, this is a defense that gave up big games to Desmond Ridder, Zach Wilson. Yeah. They lost to Bryce Young last year, all those things. What is your concern level about Darnold right now for this?
Look, week? Darnold right now is averaging 9 yards per pass attempt.
Right, right.
It's the classic thing you worry about here with a team that can run the ball. They're averaging over 5 yards per carry on the ground. Or at least Aaron Jones is averaging over 5 yards per carry. It's that, are you going to get duped on some play action? Are you going to give up these long balls like you did last year or like you did in week one? So I'm very concerned. I think, and again, whether Sam Darnold ends up being a real quarterback or not, it's early in the season and you don't have his particular tendencies. You've seen him play before, but you haven't seen him in this scheme and what they like to do and what they're shying away from. So, yeah, I'm concerned. There's a lot of potential there, especially, you know, playing in Minnesota for Sam Darnold to have some deep strikes. We're less than 2 weeks removed from the Texans allowing 3 50-plus yard plays.
Absolutely. This was Nick Caserio, not on Texans All Access, but this was on our show back before the season started. And this was a theme throughout the offseason. I mean, D'Amico brought it up a bunch of times. We got to tackle better. Here's Nick Caserio talking about the Texans tackling.
Yeah, tackling is always kind of a tricky thing because the way that you work on it in the offseason is you just have to technique it, drill it, and you hope to see a lot of those things carry over into real live game action, understanding that the opportunities are a little bit more limited. But overall, we've done a pretty good job tackling in the preseason, and you know, we're going to be tested to see how good of a tackling team we really are in week one. But JP's worked really hard. He's had a great attitude. He's been very diligent. I mean, we've had a group of players that have been in the building since February. He was one of those players. So I would say he's one of our toughest, smartest, probably most versatile players. And he has the ability to help our team and help our defense. And, you know, hopefully we can put that on display here Sunday.
And JP is Jalen Petrie. I bring that up because, you know, tackling will be a big key, especially as you point out, Seth. Aaron Jones is having a hell of a season so far, two games in. The Texans rank first in tackling efficiency through the first 2 weeks of the season, according to Next Gen Stats, 6.4% missed tackle rate. So that's a focal point of the offseason that's panned out really nicely so far.
And I've been really excited about this because one of the things that frustrated me last year was when you guys had Blake Cashman on in the postgame. Blake Cashman, who plays for the Vikings, by the way. And you asked him about missed tackles because the Texans had a boatload of missed tackles, and Cashman basically said, yeah, they don't care. They just want everybody flying to the ball and swarming and taking your shot. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, all right, I guess the theory is that as long as you have multiple guys getting to the ball, then it doesn't matter as much. But it matters. It does matter at times and sometimes critical times. You can do both. You can rally to the ball and have good tackling form. This year, during the thing I got most excited about during the preseason, where you can't tell much in terms of outcomes and everything because you're going against backups, this, that, the other thing, was that I did see guys practicing good tackling form in the preseason games. You could tell it had been drilled. You can go back and watch some of the sequences from these last couple weeks, and you see guys with their arms out wide before contact. And one of the most frustrating things for me over the years has been coaches acting like you can't work on this because you're not in pads in practice, which is the dumbest thing ever, because nobody in the NFL has been tackling in practice since like the 1950s. Right. So whether you have shoulder pads or not, you can still practice it, but it takes a lot of discipline on the part of the coaching staff. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things I worried about with this defense was, okay, why are these guys deluded into thinking you can't work on this?
Right.
So they obviously figured it out in the offseason, and they've become a very sure and sound tackling team so far through two games.
Yeah, they've been good. They've been the best in terms of tackling efficiency in the NFL.
Sean, I just the reason I get so worked up over it is because I was my first 4 years in the league, I wasn't a good tackler. I spent one offseason with one special teams coach working on it one-on-one just in my off time, and all of a sudden I was a really good tackler.
Yeah.
Because for the first time in my 20 years of playing football, somebody actually taught me proper tackling form. And like going back to most people who complain about bad tackling form have no idea how to coach it. So this is very encouraging to me. If you think about those Legion of Boom defenses, that was one of the biggest elements to them being as good as they were, is they were incredibly good tacklers, and they had a rugby coach who was their tackling coach who would come in and work on it with them in the offseason, doing all these non-padded drills just like rugby players do because they don't wear pads.
I'm not being snarky at all. This is a legitimate question based on what you just said about yourself. Because you stuck around for a decade, you know, you got paid a couple of times in the league, right? You were a bad tackler. Your own self-assessment, you were a bad tackler for 4 years. How did you hang around for those first 4 years the way that you did in such a prominent spot on the Jags?
Because everybody's a bad tackler.
Okay.
So it wasn't, I was a bad tackler by my estimation.
That's why I say by your self-assessment. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I would say by my standards in terms of, but look, Sean, for a guy that runs a 5.140, every missed tackle hurts that much more.
I'm missing
opportunities to, you know. So it was every little edge I could get, I needed to have that edge. Yeah.
I figured you were probably being a little hard on yourself. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
I'm like, if I'm just somebody tuning into the show for the first time, like, guy played for 10 years. He was a crappy tackler for the first four of them. Wow.
Yes. Yeah. Like that says in the Bible, he that doth run a 5.140 doeth more with less.
I'm familiar with that verse. Yes, absolutely. Injury news for the Texans. Let's skip down to the centers here, Ben. Juice Scruggs, Jarrett Patterson. Well, first we'll mention Brevin Jordan went on the IR, so he will not be playing in this game nor many games anytime soon. Juice Scruggs, Jarrett Patterson, both a no-go at practice yesterday. So this is something to keep an eye on. We may be down to center number three, which would be Kendrick Green, on Saturday in a tough environment. That's a loud stadium, man. Here's D'Amico Ryans on the center position heading into this week.
Whoever, you know, is out and different guys that step in, it's always up. It's never on one guy, you know, from that perspective of we're waiting, we're hanging our hats on one guy being able to communicate and handle everything. That's unfair, right? Offense, defense, special teams. Like when you play this game, it's about as many guys as possible, however many guys it takes to communicate and get on the same page, all 11 guys. So it's not on one guy. It's everybody around, everybody helping each other. That's how we'll communicate.
Yeah. It is a pretty important guy, though, the center, I would say. Not all guys are created equal.
Yeah, and the interior offensive line needs to pick it up. They're allowing pressure on too many things that are very preventable, all three of them. It's not just a youth excuse. Patterson obviously has some excuses in that he wasn't getting those reps with the first team, but those excuses don't help you in the win-or-loss column.
Right.
So, this offensive line has made progress in a lot of ways. They still have to clean some things up. Last week, I credit some of those sacks to just good game planning and good execution by the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those late blitzes, that's not on the offensive line necessarily. That's just a really well-executed defense. But there's just too much of the simple stuff that's very preventable. So hopefully they can clean that up this week.
You cool with Cam Akers being the frontline back if Damian Pierce and Joe Mixon can't go this weekend? They're holding out hope for both.
Yeah. Am I cool with it?
You excited about it? Are you nervous about it? Like Cam
Akers? I'm nervous
Cam
about
Akers?
It. I'm nervous anticipation. Yeah. I'm not, I mean, obviously, I'm really, you know who I'm really cool with? I'm really cool with a healthy Joe Mixon back there.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That's what I feel good about. So
yeah.
I think that versus this defense, yeah, I'm interested to see, all right, listen, what do we always say? If you want to be a genuinely Super Bowl caliber team, you got to be able to win in multiple ways.
Mm-hmm.
And at least a few times during the season, maybe it's, all right, yeah, this is a spread it out and let CJ go to work. I don't want to say let CJ cook because it annoys me, because that's not the best way to operate week in and week out. But if your running backs are all banged up and if Brevin Jordan is out, that maybe a few times this year they do just simply have to find weaknesses in the pass defense and use the passing game and some of the jet sweeps and otherwise as your running game. The short passes, what do they call it? The long handoff.
Long handoff,
talk about screens and short passes, it's like a long handoff. That's your run game.
Yep. Boy, as we let's pivot here for a minute here on Payne and Pendergast. Texans related, but I was really surprised how many people were worked up about the C.J. Stroud, Caleb Williams interaction at midfield after the game on Sunday yesterday. The initial reaction that I'd seen, well, let's play it first. This is C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams midfield following the game, and CJ coming up and giving Caleb a little bit of advice. Caleb starts to pull away about midway through this clip, and CJ says, "No, wait, no, come here." And I want to say something to you. Here's what it sounded like.
How about
yeah,
bro?
Yeah.
Hey, keep going. Stop taking those hits.
Yeah,
I know. Hey,
yeah.
Learn from those mistakes, and everything that you got, bro, is in you already, bro. You're going to be a hell of a player in this league.
Yeah.
All right, boy.
Appreciate it.
For sure.
All right,
so that's a 12-second clip with a little bit of advice. Stop taking hits. A reminder that he made some mistakes. That would have rubbed me the wrong way, probably. I will admit that. But then just some encouragement at the end. Like, you got this in you, bro. You're going to be a great player in this league. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people upset at CJ.
I think, and we'll hear from some of them in a second here. The people in Chicago and Mike, one HOA Florio. I think the biggest thing that I think people get worked up over is just that they're the same age. CJ is a month. 5 or 6 weeks older than Caleb Williams, and that in their minds that puts them as equals. I would just have to remind everybody that, well, CJ was the Offensive Rookie of the Year last year. He's played an entire NFL season, and he hasn't displayed any signs of emotional frailty the way that Caleb Williams has.
Right.
I think Caleb Williams could be 7 years older than CJ Stroud, but he's also a guy that needs to go home and cuddle his dog after bad performances, or nestle his head in his mother's bosom while crying after bad performances. So let's lay off the chronology here and act like years on Earth don't equal the same in terms of maturity level.
Yeah, that's... I'm with you on that. I'm 100% with you. Here was CJ yesterday, because CJ, I'm sure, probably heard some of the noise about it. Here was CJ on what we just listened to.
Yeah, I had some of the best advice given to me last year. And, you know, me and Caleb, I was not trying to, like, treat him like I was trying to, like, little bro him or nothing. He knows that, too. I have a ton of respect for him. I told him I had respect for him. But I had so many guys coming to me after games last year, and that meant the world to me, that those guys even thought about giving me advice. So I just try to get back to what the game has given to me. So I wish him the best, man. I want him to do amazing in this league. I think he will. I think that he'll get his groove. And once you get your rhythm, I didn't get my rhythm until like week three, week four. So I can see him, his game picking up from here. And so, and you know, I don't think he was trying to like, you know, be any towards away. He's just upset that they lost. I totally understand. So I have a ton of respect for that guy, man. I want him to do extremely well, just like any other guy, until we play on that day. You know what I mean? And after the game, we can be cool. You know what I mean? But I'm definitely, you know, rooting for him and want to see him do extremely well.
There's so many interesting interpersonal tentacles to this story, and a lot of it has to do with the perception of both of these guys, C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams, to me. The perception that Caleb Williams just didn't want anything to do with what CJ was dishing to him. My guess is that CJ probably got advice from guys after losses last year. They had seven of them, right?
Right.
So,
yeah.
So the notion that Caleb was pulling away and that CJ would stay there and let guys pour into him, I do think there is a difference between how these two guys are wired. Like, Caleb is a Hollywood guy. Caleb was as NIL as NIL gets. You know, like, the perception was he was almost like Jefferson on Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I thought he just flew in for games at USC. You know, like, that kind of thing. CJ is a guy who still can't believe when celebrities talk about him. You know, like, I didn't even know that I didn't even know Matt Stafford knew who I was. You know, that kind
of
thing.
Yeah, no, and I think that's part of it, too, is that, listen, this is where I am hook, line, and sinker, full bore into the Caleb Williams diva narrative now. Because I think one of the things that annoyed people about CJ in that was him saying, come here.
If he doesn't do that, this isn't even a topic, probably.
I think the only reason he had to say come here, is that Caleb Williams, I understand, he was upset after a loss and what have you, but there was no part of him that was eager to hear advice or anything from an older guy. I don't think he enjoyed being reminded that he did make mistakes.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, if I go next level on this, I'll give CJ credit for knowing that Caleb Williams might be the guy that needs to have it pointed out to him that they were his mistakes.
Right.
It's not as simple as, oh, I got sacked 7 times. Poor me.
Yeah.
Oh, here I have a bad offensive line again, just like I did at USC.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those mistakes were mistakes. And, I think Caleb Williams is rapidly turning into the guy that that unfortunately the narrative said that he would be. Sorry, Chicago.
Yeah.
You're burdened with another Jay Cutler. It's just that this one isn't even... It doesn't even look like a badass while he's being Jay Cutler.
No.
Jay Cutler at least looked like he should be smoking a cigarette
That's
or something.
Right. That's right. So here's Dan Bernstein. He's a host on our sister station, 670 The Score up in Chicago, I believe middays. And people getting agitated on behalf of Caleb Williams about this 12 seconds worth of interaction is really funny to me. Here's Dan Bernstein getting upset about it.
We were debating this, of where Stroud is coming from. I found it to be a little presumptuous, if not performative, on his part. For, I think it's one thing. What do you think the protocol is for when you can give advice like you're an OG quarterback in that moment after a hard-fought NFL game? If you're the same age as a guy, to go over and treat him like he's your kid, I could understand if Caleb Williams is like, look, I might hear this from Aaron Rodgers. I'm not hearing it from you.
All right. Did he treat him like he was his kid? Like, I don't know. That's how you're
I'll hear this from Aaron Rodgers, but not you.
Right. Like, I'd rather listen to C.J. Stroud than Aaron Rodgers if I'm Caleb Williams.
I did not watch the Hard Knocks from training camp this year where they followed the Bears around. Yeah. I think Abigail was saying on the YouTube stream that that during the Hard Knocks episode, he did not look like he was taking critiques well.
So. Yeah, there was a big deal made that he didn't bring a notebook to Matt Eberflus's office when the two of them sat down with each other.
Oh, that's right. He doesn't need notes. Boy, yeah. Man, I'll tell you what. I know, honestly.
Doesn't get nervous. Doesn't need notes.
Yeah, never gets nervous. He hasn't been nervous since his first start at USC.
Yeah.
Dude, all right. It's okay to be nervous a little bit, man.
Right.
Like, what the hell? I remember, you know what? That's one of my favorite things. One of my favorite conversations I ever had in the NFL was talking to Tony Boselli before a game once, mm-hmm. back when he was in his prime, not the Houston version, but when he was, you know, Hall of Fame caliber Tony Boselli.
Yeah.
And it was cool because he told me, we were talking about being nervous before the game, before games, and he said, every game, I feel like, oh, I'm going to suck. Mm-hmm. I'm going to suck. Oh, man. And I remember Bruce Matthews saying something similar. And, you know, Bruce Matthews, one of the best offensive linemen who ever played the game for 2 decades. It's okay to be nervous, man. The great ones do it. It's the old thing, like, being brave doesn't mean you're never scared. It's that you manage your fear really well.
Amen.
And there's something about somebody that needs to point out to people that he never gets nervous that rubs me the wrong way.
Thou doth protest too much. Yeah. So
yeah. Because he looked like he was peeing down his leg that whole game.
Dude, I watched him play Notre Dame last year. He threw 3 picks. He was running for his life. He looked nervous as hell.
But he was never nervous.
And it's okay.
He was never nervous.
I guess not. Yeah.
I'd love to be in Vietnam, and my lieutenant is like basically like, "Hey, we're gonna sleep in this swamp tonight. That's in direct firing line of
don't
the enemy.
Nervous.
But don't worry, I'm not nervous.
Yeah, don't be nervous." So Mike Florio was actually on with Dan Bernstein, who we just played. So Florio is a guest in that conversation. And I go figure, Florio thinks that CJ was overstepping a little bit.
I try to watch objectively. Yeah, he seems like a guy who just lost a football game and really isn't interested in getting a lecture at midfield about basic, obvious stuff. Keep mm-hmm. fighting. I mean, I don't need to hear cliches. I want to go change my clothes and get the hell out of here. So, you know, I think some made too much of it. But you're right. At what point did CJ Stroud become Tom Brady? He's not there yet. So I think it's just a weird thing all around. I think it's not CJ Stroud's place to preach to a guy who's just 1 year behind him by way of experience. And from Caleb's perspective, you know, look, you just lost a game. You don't want to hear it. But I wasn't surprised. I was disappointed, but I wasn't surprised that the knee-jerk reaction by most was, oh, who does Caleb think he is?
Yeah, and that's fair to point out. Like there were two reactions. One is the one we're hearing today where people thought CJ overstepped. The initial reaction I saw, mostly because it's Texans people that I, you know, that get curated onto my timeline, is that, well, what, Caleb sure was rude when CJ's just trying to help him out. Either way, like if I had just heard Bernstein and Florio, well, let's play Nick Wright too here real quick. This was Nick Wright. Our former colleague here at Sports Radio 610 does a fantastic job on FS1. He was very upset with CJ Stroud kind of little broing in his eyes, Caleb Williams.
I think Caleb handled it as well as you could have, given the fact he had to be absolutely furious. That is so... They are contemporaries. That is not a big bro, little bro situation.
It was, though.
That's not... No, first of all, do you know how old Caleb Williams is? He's 23. He turns 24 in a few weeks. Do you know how old CJ Stroud is? He's 23. He turns 24 in a few weeks. This is Caleb Williams and CJ Stroud. Do you know how he looked? Caleb looks at CJ, I would imagine. He remembers this night when they were colleagues on the dais at the Heisman Trophy ceremony, and Caleb won the award. Like, the idea that this guy...
Irrelevant.
Means
nothing.
Brew, I totally disagree
means
with
nothing.
You.
We ain't in college no
that's
more.
That's fine.
I'm eight times better than you.
Okay.
Listen to me.
No, but that's not how it works.
I'm trying to help you.
Okay, two things real quick. One, you hear the react... If you had not heard or nor seen the interaction between Caleb and CJ, and all you heard was the... reaction to it from Bernstein and Florio and Nick, and then somebody played it for you, you'd be like, this is what everybody's what, like, this was 12 seconds of interaction. This is what everybody is creating, this whole thing that CJ's talking down to him and and little broing him and whatever. The other thing, I'm shocked that Nick has this take, because Nick has generally been the youngest at everything he's done along the way. Like, Nick and I, you know, Nick and all of us were co-workers here, colleagues here. I guarantee you there's advice I got from Nick along the way, and he's 15 years younger than me, and I'm like, that's really good advice. I'm glad he gave me that advice, you know? Like,
yeah, I got into this industry when I was 36 years old.
And 38 for me,
I was a green rookie. Yeah, so there are a lot of younger guys than me in our business that I look to. And then especially these days now with the streaming and whatnot, I look at 22-year-olds
as
the wise old sages. Can you show me how to do this,
dude,
on my iPhone?
Dude, I learned how to use Splice thanks to somebody who's 23 years old. You know what
right,
I mean? Like,
right.
To make videos. Like, if you... I think it's this way. I mean, our world's changing so fast. I think you got to... That just shocks me that Nick would make advice or just encouragement an age-based thing. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that was really surprising to me.
The Heisman Trophy stuff, too. Like, okay, Marcus Mariota. Who'd you rather have you giving advice about how to play in the NFL? Marcus Mariota, another emotionally frail person,
right.
Or CJ Stroud? I feel like CJ Stroud's figured it out a little bit better than Marcus Mariota.
Yeah.
We gotta stop mollycoddling these emotionally frail quarterbacks, man. All right, it's sink or swim,
dude.
These days. He made some mistakes in the game. If he can't handle it, can't hear from it,
well,
then so be it.
Hey, look,
yeah.
I don't have the list of Heisman winners in front of me, but if you just go through, you mentioned Mariota, but like, Baker Mayfield,
Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, it's worked out pretty well. Bryce Young,
a lot.
Jameis Winston,
yeah.
Johnny Manziel.
The Heisman Trophy has hardly been something that you can use as some sort of shield from unwanted advice. You know, like, listen, man, I don't need your advice. I won the Heisman Trophy, okay?
Listen,
me and Johnny Manziel, all right?
Listen, CJ, I appreciate where your heart is, but I've got Sam Bradford's number, and I'm going to be giving him a call
right,
later on, okay?
Exactly.
Instead of you.
Yeah.
He won a Heisman? Ever hear of it?
Yeah, man.
So I guess the other part, let me ask you this. This is my barometer for it, because Dan Bernstein... Is that his name?
Dan Bernstein, yes.
Dan Bernstein had said that it seemed performative, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
CJ was mic'd up.
Yeah.
That's the question is, do you think that CJ would or would not have done the exact same thing if he was not mic'd up?
He would have. I think he would have. I don't think the mic'd up had anything to do with it.
Well, and I think that's where, I think it's one of those things, when you're mic'd up, it's tough because you don't want to be the guy that changes your whole personality because you're mic'd up. But then there's times where you almost feel like, this is going to look like I'm just some... So I think that's where CJ wanted him to come in close so he could tell him, not necessarily so the mics could pick it up, but it might have ended up being more audible, ironically enough, because they were mic'd up, or because CJ had to say it louder.
Yeah.
Because Caleb was trying to get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
Everybody stop mollycoddling Caleb Williams. It's not what he needs. He needs tough love. CJ's the one man that's man enough to point out that he made mistakes. Okay?
Yes. Yep.
You got the Bears. Eberflus is over there probably like consulting with an HR expert on, hey, how do I tell Caleb that he looked stupid a few times out there?
Eberflus.
Because I don't want him to take it the wrong way and go into an emotional crevasse.
Yeah.
I said crevasse, but I feel like Dan Bernstein would have pronounced it that way, like he's a mountain climber or something.
Performative.
Sorry, I said crevasse. Yeah, performatively.
Performative. Hey, speaking of Bryce Young, are the Panthers in the mode where they're going to trade Bryce Young here anytime soon? Could he be off to somewhere else? And who's getting the blame? Who's getting the finger pointed at them other than Bryce Young for the Bryce Young debacle? We will get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Do you still believe in Bryce as a future, maybe franchise quarterback later on down the
road? Absolutely. This is a developmentally minded program, so the development didn't stop. You know, every rep he's out there, we're evaluating the whole thing, having conversations, and just continuing to push all of our guys, including Bryce, to take that next step. Every day is a growth possibility and opportunity, so we're fully committed to that.
That was Dave Canales, the head coach of the Carolina Panthers. I've watched a couple of his press conferences.
Yeah.
And this guy looks like he's in a little over his head. That's my assessment so far. I don't know that this is the guy equipped to tame David Tepper at all and actually operate Carolina like a real NFL football team.
You know what's funny is I always think of the guy that I think made a good career decision in going to a really weird and dysfunctional place as a young coach was Lane Kiffin when he went to the Raiders.
Yeah.
Because that caught everybody by surprise that, oh my gosh, they hired this young kid. But I think Lane Kiffin had the personality to where, he was not going to back down to Al Davis one bit. That's one of the things Al Davis admired about him, I think. But ultimately, you know, those two personalities were not going to coexist. But also, I think Lane Kiffin knew that nobody was going to blame Lane Kiffin for it not working out if he goes there as a young head coach. I don't think Canales has that same attitude.
No.
I don't think he's as brash as a Lane Kiffin. You got to have a certain intestinal fortitude, and I just don't know if Canales is that guy.
That's funny. You know what? Like that, boy. If you happen to be listening and you're part of the media contingent that covers Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, it would be a fascinating question because I'm just looking at Lane Kiffin's Pro Football Reference profile here. Yeah. He was the coach of the Raiders for 2 years in 2007, and really just one and change. Like he coached there in 2007. They went 4-12 with Jamarcus Russell as the starting quarterback. And then in 2008, he got fired 4 games into the season, again, with Jamarcus Russell as his quarterback. Lane Kiffin probably has fantastic takes on dysfunctional ownership and really crappy number one overall draft picks. Plus he coached against Bryce Young.
Right. Well, and the other thing, too, I always have to point out is, like, as weird as the Raiders were, John Gruden came after Lane Kiffin with the Raiders. So it's not like it was an unsalvageable situation or anything. Lane Kiffin could have done better himself, I'm sure. I don't know if Lane's all that self-reflective or not, but I do think that when you go into a situation like that, you almost got to say, listen, I'm going to stick by my principles and what I think is right, and if it gets ugly, it gets ugly. Yeah. That's just how it is. But I can't sit here and kowtow to the billionaire, you know, basically who's just – it's Brewster's millions when it comes to those guys knowing what they're doing as a football coach. So – or as a football owner, that you just got to stand by and you got to be ready. And maybe Canales is not that guy. But I also do think Bryce Young, like, he does some Will Levis stupid stuff on the football field, including the hit he took at the end of that game where he's got his eyes downfield while somebody's bearing into him. And he didn't even get the pass off because the S2 cognition test is really good at diagnosing how well somebody tracks moving objects.
Yeah.
But apparently the 240-pound linebacker right in front of you is not assessed by the S2 cognition
test. Yeah, that wasn't part of the test.
As he presses your spleen into the back of your spine, he doesn't know exactly how to handle that.
Not part of the test. And by the way,
so Canales might have after that game been like, all right, this guy's going to get killed if we don't teach him
some
things.
Maybe. Paul Feinbaum, who is part of ESPN's team covering college football, focused in, dialed in almost exclusively on the SEC. So he watched every snap of Bryce Young's college career at Alabama. He said, Carolina screwed this kid up.
There's no way to sugarcoat his performance has been miserable, but I blame the management of that franchise. Greeny, I always thought Daniel Snyder was the worst owner in modern NFL history. Well, he's being rivaled by David Tepper. He has been a complete and total bust in Carolina. I live down there, so I've watched it up close. Bryce has not been given a fair chance. I think it really is embarrassing and disgraceful for what they have done to him. And quite frankly, I think if you brought Patrick Mahomes into this franchise, Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, as rookies, the Carolina Panthers would have screwed them up just as well as they did to poor Bryce Young. I feel sorry for the young man.
Okay, two things can be true. Bryce Young, like the probability-wise, most quarterbacks are busts these days.
Yeah.
The vast majority of number one overall picks or top quarterbacks taken just flat out don't work out. So two things can be true. Bryce Young can potentially maybe not be a good NFL quarterback, but also he's in the worst possible place that he could be as a bad young NFL quarterback.
Yep.
So there's just no way to know. I do think I don't really take a lot of, like, when Feinbaum or any other exclusively college person weighs in the NFL, they have no clue.
Right.
They don't. It's like these college football fans when they try to insist that their quarterback is a pro prospect. And you watch the college game, you're like, oh my
God. Yeah, not a pro prospect. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, 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 no. So I don't, no, Feinbaum. You're not allowed to weigh in on this.
Here's Baker Mayfield. He was asked about this yesterday. Baker Mayfield, former number one overall pick, who it took three more stops for him to get to where now he's back to being a good starting quarterback in the NFL. He says Bryce will be back.
Quarterback's hard, especially for young guys, when you're not surrounded with the pieces that, you know, not given the opportunity to have success. And so that's a lot of the time guys have the talent, they might have the brains, but they don't have the right opportunity, the right fit. I mean, I'm sitting here right now and in a way better fit than the other places I've been. And that's not to put other teams down, but it's a matter of the pieces around you, the coaches, and for Bryce, a guy that, you know, I can relate to this, finding that belief within yourself again, and he'll get it. His story's far, far from finished.
You think
so, Baker? Oh, go ahead.
You think? Oh, no, I'm listening to Baker, and I'm trying to figure out what my prediction is for what eventually happened. Like, does Bryce Young have this redemption story like Baker does, or Geno Smith?
I think it's very possible. Yeah. I do think that, look, everything Baker Mayfield said is 100% true, you know, other than his prediction. You don't know if that's true or not. Right. So, yeah, there's still positive things about Bryce Young.
Yep.
I think that when it comes to the Carolina mismanagement side of it, I don't think they did things any differently than a lot of teams have done in recent years, which is they wanted to elevate him as quickly as possible and make him the guy without having him earn it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that trend that's starting to reverse itself now over the course of the past decade or so, where people say, well, nope, you got to play him right away because they're immediately, that's why you drafted him. I don't know, man. Defenses have evolved. The offenses had pulled ahead for a little while, well, they incorporated some of the more spread elements and it was easier to play quarterback, but defenses have evolved. And what college quarterbacks are thrust into right now is a completely different world than it was in, say, 2010 or so.
Yeah.
And I think that you just won't know until he gets into an actual functional situation whether he's actually a viable quarterback or not.
It's so wild. With the TV on in here, the debate shows right now. Like, Mel Kiper is on ESPN right now, campaigning for the NFL to ban too high safety looks. I'm guessing because passing is way down the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got to bring the safeties up closer to the box, you know, so you can.
So he wants them to ban cover two?
I don't have the audio on in here. I'm busy doing a show with you. But yes, the caption is the NFL needs to ban too high safety look, like the too deep safety back look. Texans probably get a ton of, so that CJ doesn't burn them deep. Yeah,
I have to guess that he's just saying that, you know, by way of making a point or something.
I don't know. It's a direct quote, and he sure is looking Kuipery right now on TV. He looks pretty adamant right now.
There's things like, honestly, there's things that the college. One of the biggest differences, again, when you go back to people not understanding why their quarterbacks are so good in college and then aren't good in the NFL, the hash marks make a really, really, really big difference.
They do.
The fact that the hash marks are wider in college makes it a lot easier to get open wide receivers because there's more space to defend on the field side. And it is one of the harder things about a quarterback moving to the NFL. It's not just the better athletes. It's that you're thrown into a more compressed space all the time. And, I've always thought, man, if a quarterback is such a premium and you like good quarterback play, just widen the hashes in the NFL.
Hey, real quick, now up on the screen, quotes from Micah Parsons on Cowboys expectations. Quote, "Not having everyone wanting it as bad as you do, that kind of hurts the most." End quote. And we wonder why he didn't get a contract extension this offseason.
That's a classic. Well, kind of like what Aaron Rodgers was doing with the Jets when he was injured, and he was saying, we need to keep all of this stuff in-house while calling out specific people on national television.
Going on a McAfee show for an hour every week.
I don't understand. Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, everybody's got to want it as much as me. I do one of the most selfish thing, which is throwing teammates under the bus.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it publicly. That's what Micah Parsons is doing.
That's unbelievable. All right, so CJ mic'd up was awesome this week. The interaction with Caleb Williams is getting the most attention. The thing that's getting the second most attention is something I actually wish CJ would not do. CJ should give Caleb Williams advice all you want. This thing I wish he would not do. We'll talk about that coming up next.